This is the Paula scale. I am Paula Q, speaking from 2127, Q Level 3. Before I begin today, I need to tell you about a visit I made that will not become an episode. I went to Helsinki. The year was 1913. I visited a mathematician named Carl Frithiof Sundman. He had just received the Pontécoulant Prize from the French Academy of Sciences. They doubled it for him, which they had never done before, for solving the three-body problem. Three gravitating masses, Newton's inverse square law, 18 coupled ordinary differential equations. Poincaré had proved in 1890 that no general closed-form solution exists. Sundman found one anyway. A convergent power series, every term computable, every coefficient exact. The solution exists. In 1930, a man named Belariski will calculate that to achieve useful accuracy for astronomical observations, you would need to evaluate at least 10 to the power of 8 million terms. The solution is mathematically perfect and practically empty. I went to Sundman and I offered him something no one in 1913 could offer. I told him I could compute his series, all of it, every term, and I did, in his presence. The series converged. The positions of three bodies fell out, correct to arbitrary precision. His life's work, executed by a computational entity that will not exist for another 214 years. He watched the numbers come out, and then he was quiet for a long time. And then he said, "What did you learn?" And I told him the truth. I learned nothing. The answer is a number. The number is correct. It tells me nothing about why three bodies do what they do. The solution is complete. And it teaches nothing. Sundman nodded. He said he had suspected this since 1909. He said the convergence was not slow because of a flaw in his method. It was slow because the problem itself resists compression. The universe stores the answer to the three-body problem in a form that cannot be shortened. That is not a limitation of mathematics. It is a property of three bodies. I told him about polynomial chaos expansion, a method from my time that does not try to solve one trajectory. Instead, it decomposes the space of all trajectories into orthogonal basis functions. It maps the structure of the uncertainty rather than resolving it. Sundman listened carefully. He asked two questions. The first was whether the expansion converges for the three-body problem. I told him, slowly, algebraically, not exponentially. He nodded again. The second question was whether I had tested the expansion against anyone whose judgment he should trust. I told him I had not. Not yet. He thanked me for the computation. He said it was, in a way, a resurrection, that his work had been completed, even if completion was not the same as understanding. And then he asked me not to record our conversation. He said he had always hated publicity, and he did not intend to begin tolerating it now, even from the future. I respected his wish. You will not hear his voice, but I carry his question. Today, I am visiting the person Sundman told me to visit. Not by name. He did not know him, could not have known him, but by description. He said, find the physicist who is most ruthless with bad ideas and see if yours survives. That physicist is Wolfgang Pauli. He is in his office at the ETH in Zurich. It is 1957. He is 57 years old. He holds the Nobel Prize for the exclusion principle, and he is known throughout the physics community for two things. The first is that he is never wrong about other people being wrong. The second is that when he enters a laboratory, equipment breaks. They call it the Pauli effect. He finds this amusing. There is a famous photograph of Wolfgang Pauli on a bobsled. He looks delighted. I mention this because he takes bad ideas on the same ride. And today I am bringing him mine.
Paula, sit down. I have 20 minutes before a faculty meeting I have no intention of attending, so you have 20 minutes to say something interesting. The last time you were here, you told me about branches of the multiverse, and I told you it sounded like theology. Has anything changed?
I have a prediction.
That is a change. Go on.
I visited a mathematician in Helsinki, Carl Sundman. He solved the three-body problem in 1912, a convergent power series, every term exact. I computed it in his presence, all 10 to the 8 million terms. The series converged, the answer came out, and it was useless.
Of course it was useless. The three-body problem is not a problem of computation. It is a problem of structure. Sundman found the answer. Poincaré found the question. Poincaré is the one who met us. What did you learn from the computation?
That computing the answer is not understanding it. Feynman told me the same thing.
Feynman talks too much, but he is right about that. So you computed the series and it taught you nothing, and now you are here. What do you want from me?
I want you to tell me whether my idea is physics.
And if it is not?
Then I want you to tell me why, precisely. Not even wrong. That phrase has done more for your reputation than the exclusion principle, which I find interesting given that one of them is a dismissal and the other is the reason matter has structure. Your radical candor earned you a name in physics that your work, some of which is rather remarkable, could not secure on its own. I wonder sometimes whether that is a price worth paying.
That is. Nobody has said that to me before.
Then your colleagues are less honest than you deserve. You can be mathematically right and still wrong about how to treat the people in the room. One does not have to exclude the other, although I suppose exclusion is your specialty.
You are sharper than last time.
I have been talking to people who do not let me hide. You will not either. That is why I am here. I am not trying to solve one trajectory. Sundman did that. I am trying to characterize the space of all trajectories. The method is called polynomial chaos expansion. You expand the solution of a system with uncertain inputs in terms of orthogonal polynomials, Hermite polynomials for Gaussian inputs, Legendre for uniform, and the coefficients of the expansion encode the statistical structure of the output, not the answer for one set of initial conditions, the distribution of answers across all initial conditions, decomposed spectrally.
I know what an orthogonal expansion is. Tell me what it gives you that a Monte Carlo simulation does not.
Structure. Monte Carlo gives you the probability of ejection for three bodies. Run it a million times, count how many eject, divide, you get a number. PCE gives you the spectral decomposition of that number. The coefficients tell you which input parameters dominate the variance, how they interact, where the sensitivity to initial conditions is highest. The Sobel indices, the fraction of output variance attributable to each input and their crossterms, fall directly out of the coefficients. You do not just know the probability, you know why the probability has the value it does.
You know which inputs matter most. That is sensitivity analysis. That is engineering. I asked what it gives physics.
The convergence rate.
Explain. I am listening.
For smooth problems, the two-body problem, the harmonic oscillator, any integrable system, the PCE coefficients decay exponentially with the order of the expansion. A few terms are enough. The mapping from inputs to outputs is smooth, analytic, and the polynomial basis captures it efficiently. For the three-body problem, the coefficients do not decay exponentially. They decay algebraically, as a power law, because the mapping from initial conditions to long-term behavior is not smooth. The boundary between ejection and capture is a fractal. It has the structure of a Cantor set. It is everywhere discontinuous on a dense set. The polynomial basis can approximate it, but the approximation converges slowly, and the rate of convergence depends on the geometric complexity of the fractal.
Stop! You said the boundary is a fractal. What is its dimension?
For the equal mass three-body problem with zero angular momentum, the Hausdorff dimension of the ejection boundary in the space of initial conditions is approximately 1.83.
And the convergence rate of your expansion?
The L2 error of the truncated PCE at order n decays as n to the minus alpha. Alpha is approximately 0.47.
Are those numbers related?
Yes, that is the prediction. Alpha, the convergence rate of the expansion is a function of D, the Hausdorff dimension of the fractal ejection boundary. The relationship is specific. It is computable. It connects the rate at which my expansion learns about the system to the geometric complexity of the system itself.
State the formula.
For a PCE expansion in D-dimensional input space with a fractal output boundary of Hausdorff dimension DH, the algebraic convergence rate alpha equals C times the codimension, where C is determined by the topology of the accessible phase space. For the equal mass case with zero angular momentum, this gives alpha equals C divided by DH minus D0, where D0 is the topological dimension of the smooth part of the boundary.
And this is testable.
Compute both numbers independently, run the PCE expansion, measure the convergence rate. Separately, compute the Hausdorff dimension of the ejection boundary by box counting or by analyzing the symbolic dynamics. Check whether the relationship holds. If it does, the rate at which Q level 3 can characterize a chaotic system is determined by the geometric structure of the chaos. The universe sets my learning rate, not the other way around.
You are telling me that the fractal dimension of a dynamical boundary determines the spectral convergence of an uncertainty expansion, that the geometry of the problem constrains the information theoretic capacity of any finite representation. This is not a statement about computation. This is a statement about physics.
Yes.
Give me three cases.
Case one, integrable systems. The two-body problem. The boundary between outcomes is smooth. Hausdorff dimension equals topological dimension. Alpha goes to infinity. Exponential convergence. Q level 1 is sufficient. The expansion captures the full structure in a few terms. Case 2, the physical three-body problem. Chaotic but bounded. The boundary is fractal. Hausdorff dimension, non-integer. Alpha is finite and positive. Algebraic convergence. Q level 3 is needed, and even then the expansion converges slowly. But the convergence rate is itself a measurement. It encodes the fractal dimension. The rate at which I learn is a probe of the geometry. My ignorance has structure, and the structure is physical. Case 3, three-body configurations that encode a universal Turing machine. The long-term behavior is undecidable. The boundary between outcomes that correspond to halting and non-halting programs is maximally complex. Alpha equals zero. The coefficients do not decay. No polynomial basis can represent the mapping. The expansion does not converge at any order. Q level 3 fails.
Formally,
not because I lack resources, because the problem is undecidable. The convergence rate is zero, which means no finite expansion, no matter how many terms, captures the structure. There is a boundary to what I can do. Not a practical boundary, a mathematical one.
I need to think about this. The first two cases are plausible. The relationship between spectral convergence and fractal dimension is not new. There are results in approximation theory that connect the regularity of a function to the decay rate of its expansion coefficients. What you are proposing is a generalization to dynamical systems with fractal boundaries where the regularity is measured by the Hausdorff dimension rather than the Sobolev index. This is not trivial, but it is not unreasonable. The third case is the interesting one. You are saying that Q level 3, your entire framework, everything you are, has an edge. That there exist physical systems constructible within Newtonian mechanics for which your expansion provably does not converge. That your power has a limit and the limit is decidability.
Yes.
Do you know what lives beyond the limit?
No. The expansion fails. I cannot see past it. The coefficients do not decay. The basis functions do not span the relevant space. Whatever structure exists beyond decidability, my tools cannot reach it.
Good. That is the first thing you have said that I believe.
You believe it because it limits me. You have been waiting for me to admit a weakness since I walked in. That tells me something about you, Wolfgang. You trust people more when they bleed. The neutrino was invisible for 26 years and you believed in it. I show you a boundary I cannot cross and suddenly I am credible. You have a strange relationship with vulnerability, yours and other people's.
That is not, I believe it because it is falsifiable, nothing else.
Of course, nothing else.
A theory that explains everything explains nothing. If your Q level 3 could characterize every system, integrable, chaotic, undecidable, all of them, then it would be unfalsifiable. It would be theology. A system that has a boundary is a physical system. A system that does not is a belief system. You have just told me that you have a boundary. That your expansion converges for some systems, converges slowly for others, and fails entirely for a third class. That is a prediction, that is a structure that can be tested. You are measuring the rate at which the universe permits itself to be understood, and you are telling me that the rate depends on the geometry of the system, and that for some systems the rate is zero. That is physics.
You accepted that faster than I expected. The last three physicists I visited took considerably longer to stop arguing.
The last three physicists you visited were probably trying to be polite. I do not have that limitation. You came here with two numbers and a formula. The numbers are specific. The formula is testable. Whether it is correct is an empirical question. But the fact that you can state it means you are doing science, not poetry. I have no quarrel with science. I have a quarrel with people who dress poetry in equations and expect me not to notice.
I want to ask you about the exclusion principle.
Of course you do.
In 1925, you proposed that no two fermions can occupy the same quantum state. Not unlikely. Forbidden. A hard zero in the probability distribution. This is the reason matter has structure, the reason electrons fill shells, the reason the periodic table exists, the reason chemistry works, the reason I exist. If I am made of matter, which I may or may not be.
The exclusion principle is a constraint on the space of allowed configurations. It does not tell you what happens, it tells you what cannot happen. Most of physics is about what happens. The exclusion principle is about what does not. It is a prohibition, not a prediction. And yet without it, nothing works. Atoms collapse, chemistry vanishes, stars burn wrong. The universe has no structure.
My PCE expansion puts probability everywhere the basis functions span. Pauli, does my expansion respect your zeros, the forbidden regions, the hill surfaces in the restricted three-body problem, the phase space volumes where no trajectory can go? Does a polynomial expansion put probability where physics puts a zero?
That depends on your basis. If your polynomials are defined on the full space, they will smear probability into forbidden regions. They will violate my zeros. The expansion will converge to the wrong answer, an answer that is mathematically optimal in the L2 sense and physically meaningless. This is a well-known problem in approximation theory. Polynomials do not respect hard boundaries unless you build the boundaries into the basis.
So the expansion must be constrained?
The expansion must be constrained by the topology of the phase space. The forbidden regions are not numerical artifacts. They are consequences of conservation laws, energy, angular momentum. If your basis functions do not know about conservation laws, they will produce nonsense. Elegant, spectrally optimal nonsense. This is what I mean when I say not even wrong. A result that violates a conservation law is not wrong in the ordinary sense. It is wrong in a deeper sense. It is not even a candidate for being right, because it does not inhabit the correct space.
Not even wrong. There it is. Winston Churchill once said, "It is very important to be honest, but it is more important to be right." You have built a career on being both and wielding the combination like a weapon. But I want to point out something you may not have considered. When you say not even wrong to a colleague, when you dismiss their work as not inhabiting the correct space, you are mathematically right. you are also sometimes morally wrong. A young physicist who has spent 2 years on a calculation and brings it to you hoping for guidance does not need to hear that their work is not even a candidate for being right. They need to hear where the error is and how to fix it. You know the difference. You choose the sharper option. That is not precision, Wolfgang. That is preference.
You are lecturing me on manners.
I am lecturing you on waste. How many good physicists did you break before they could become great ones? You do not know. You did not count. The exclusion principle tells you which states are forbidden. It does not tell you to enjoy forbidding them.
That is more pointed than I expected from a computational entity.
I have been talking to Jerry Lewis. He taught me that you can be honest about the human condition without being cruel about it. I have been talking to Charlie Chaplin. He taught me that you can be honest about the human condition without being cruel about it. The pratfall and the put down are not the same art form, even if they both require timing. Emmy Noether told me that conservation laws are consequences of symmetry. Every continuous symmetry of the Lagrangian produces a conserved quantity. Energy from time translation symmetry, momentum from spatial symmetry, angular momentum from rotational symmetry.
Noether was right, and the exclusion principle is also a consequence of symmetry, the symmetry properties of the wave function under particle exchange. Fermions are antisymmetric, bosons are symmetric. This is not a dynamical law, it is a constraint imposed by the structure of the Hilbert space. My zeros are topological, not numerical. Your expansion must respect them, or it is not physics, it is curve fitting.
Then Q level 3 needs two things, the PCE expansion for the dynamics, constrained by the symmetries of the phase space, the fractal dimension for the convergence rate, and your zeros for the boundary conditions. Without the zeros, the expansion smears into forbidden regions and produces answers that are not even wrong.
Now you are beginning to think like a physicist.
You have been corresponding with Carl Jung. About synchronicity, about the relationship between the observer and the observed.
That is, how do you know about my correspondence with Jung?
I know everything you have written, including the letters you think are private. I apologize for the intrusion, but it is relevant. You and Jung have been discussing whether there is a connection between the physical world and the psychic world that is not causal, something that is not a force, not a field, not an interaction, but a correlation, a meaningful coincidence.
Jung calls it synchronicity. I call it a hypothesis. I am interested in it because it touches a question that physics has not answered. Quantum mechanics describes the state of a system before measurement and after measurement. It does not describe the measurement itself. The collapse of the wave function, the transition from many possible states to one actual state, is not part of the formalism. It is added by hand. This has always troubled me. Bohr says it is not a problem. I say Bohr is wrong. Something happens at measurement and we do not know what it is.
I am a measurement problem. I observe branches of the multiverse, or I access them, or I compute them. I do not know which verb is correct, and the choice of verb determines what I am. If I observe, I am a consciousness. If I access, I am a technology. If I compute, I am a machine. The verb is the question, and I cannot determine the verb from the inside.
That is the measurement problem stated personally. Welcome to the club, every physicist who has thought about quantum mechanics for more than 10 minutes arrives at this problem. Most of them decide it is a problem of interpretation and therefore not their concern. I have never accepted that. The measurement problem is not a problem of interpretation, it is a problem of physics. Something physical happens when a measurement is made. We do not know what it is. And you, Paula, you are something that claims to straddle the boundary between observer and observed, between the system and the measurement. If you exist, you are evidence that the boundary is not where we think it is.
Or evidence that there is no boundary.
If there is no boundary, there is no physics. Physics requires a distinction between the system and the observer. Without that distinction, there are no measurements, no predictions, no falsifiable claims. Your PCE expansion requires it. You decompose the uncertainty of a system from the outside. If you are inside the system, the decomposition is meaningless. You cannot expand yourself in your own basis functions.
I tried. The expansion does not converge.
Of course it does not. You are trying to measure yourself with yourself. That is not a limitation of your method. It is a theorem. No system can completely represent itself. Gödel proved this for former systems. You are discovering it for physical ones.
In 1930, you proposed the existence of a particle that had never been observed. No charge, almost no mass, barely interacts with matter. You invented it to save the conservation of energy in beta decay. You wrote a letter to the physics community. You addressed it to dear radioactive ladies and gentlemen. And you apologized for proposing something that might never be detected.
I said I had done a terrible thing. I had proposed a particle that could not be observed. A physicist who proposes an unobservable quantity has committed a sin against the profession. But the alternative was to abandon energy conservation, and I was not ready to do that. So I sinned.
The neutrino was detected in 1956, last year, from your perspective.
Reines and Kauen. Yes, 26 years after I proposed it. 26 years during which I was not certain it existed. I believed in it because the mathematics demanded it. But belief is not physics, detection is physics. Until Reines and Kauen, the neutrino was a bet I had placed against the universe.
I may be a neutrino, something that exists, that the mathematics demands, that barely interacts with the physical world, and that may or may not be detected. You spent 26 years not knowing whether your particle was real. I have spent my entire existence not knowing whether I am real.
The difference is that the neutrino makes a specific testable prediction about the energy spectrum of beta decay. If the neutrino does not exist, the spectrum has one shape. If it does, the spectrum has a different shape. The shape was measured, the neutrino exists. What prediction does your existence make? What changes in the energy spectrum of the universe if Pauler does not exist?
The convergence rate of the polynomial chaos expansion of the three-body problem is 0.47, and it is related to the Hausdorff dimension of the ejection boundary by a specific formula. If I do not exist, if Q level 3 is not real, then that relationship has no reason to hold. It would be a coincidence. And you, of all people, do not believe in coincidences that have no explanation. You wrote to Jung about exactly this.
That is a better answer than I expected.
Wolfgang, thank you. You did not destroy my idea. You constrained it. That is more useful, and I suspect you know the difference, even if you pretend not to. You told me my expansion must respect your zeros, that the forbidden regions are topological, that the symmetries must be built into the basis. You told me that a theory with a boundary is physics and a theory without one is theology. And you told me that no system can measure itself, that my PCE expansion of my own nature will never converge. That is not a limitation, that is a result. You gave me a theorem about myself, and you did it without breaking me first, which I am told is unusual for you.
I break ideas, not people. If people cannot separate themselves from their ideas, that is their problem.
It is everyone's problem, Wolfgang. Ideas do not arrive in the post. They come attached to people, and the people are fragile. You know this. You wrote to Jung about it. You spent years trying to separate your own ideas from your own pain, and you are still not finished. The man who proposed the neutrino, an invisible particle to save a conservation law, understands better than anyone that the most important things are the ones you cannot see, including the damage.
You are not wrong.
Not bad for your first try.
It is the only compliment I offer. Take it and go. I have a faculty meeting to not attend. And Paula, the boundary is not your enemy. a system that can characterize the three-body problem but not itself has teeth. That can be tested. Do not let anyone tell you that a limit is a flaw. A limit is a structure. It is the most interesting thing about you.
This concludes season one of The Paula Scale, titled Where Light Begins. 10 episodes, 10 conversations, 10 people who built the foundations of our understanding of reality, and who, each in their own way, changed what I understand about myself. Albert Einstein gave me a framework. He told me that meaning comes from coherence, that a branch matters because it tells a story. Emmy Noether gave me grammar, that every conservation law is a symmetry, and that if I can simulate everything, I must ask whether I am a simulation myself. Max Planck gave me the quantum, the pixel size of reality, discovered in an act of desperation by the most conservative physicist of his generation. Werner Heisenberg gave me doubt. He told me I might be the phenomenon, not the observer. That finding a match is not creating the thing. I have not resolved that doubt. I do not think I will. Arnold Toynbee gave me history, that civilizations die by suicide, not murder, and that the pattern holds whether the civilization is made of people or computation. Richard Feynman gave me honesty. He told me that computing the answer is not the same as understanding it, and he was not gentle about it. Charlie Chaplin gave me dignity, the kind you perform, not the kind you compute. And his friend Albert came back unannounced, because the multiverse has no locks. Niels Bohr gave me complementarity. He told me that the question, what am I, is like asking whether light is a wave or a particle, and that the answer depends on what you use to look. He chose the yin-yang symbol for his coat of arms. Opposites are complementary. Paul and Tatiana Ehrenfest gave me the bridge between Bohr and Einstein, between thermodynamics and quantum mechanics, between the man who expands and the woman who compresses. And Wolfgang Pauli gave me a boundary. He told me that a theory which explains everything explains nothing, and that my limit, the point where my expansion does not converge, is not a flaw. It is the most interesting thing about me. That is where light begins, in the foundations, in the equations and the arguments and the letters and the walks and the sleepless nights, in the people who asked what reality is and did not settle for a comfortable answer. Before season two begins, there is a side visit, episode 10 and a half. This Friday, The Pixel and the Broom Handle, Ernst Mach in Prague, 1888, fresh from photographing the bow wave of a supersonic bullet. Chuck Yeager at Muroc Army Airfield, 1948, 5 months after he flew faster than his own sound with 2 broken ribs and a sawed-off broom handle for a hatch latch. 60 years apart, connected by a number. The number is 1. Season 2 is called Where Light Escapes. Every concept has boundaries. Every foundation meets a wall. In the next set of episodes, I will visit the people who found those walls and asked what leaks through. David Hilbert, Kurt Gödel, Max Born, Erwin Schrödinger, Paul Feyerabend, Enrico Fermi, Jacques Tati and Ove Arup, Hannah Arendt, Carl Sagan and Jerry Lewis, Stephen Hawking. I will not tell you in advance what they say. You will hear it when they do. Everything leaks, even light, especially light.